Welcome to Now. Is there a way to turn a terrorist into an upstanding citizen? In Saudi Arabia, the answer involves a new job, a new house, and a stay at a place they call the resort. Stay with us.
Now on PBS. On the Road with host David Brancaccio and senior correspondent Maria Hinojosa. Funding for Now is provided by the Orfila Family Foundation, the Park Foundation, the Marguerite Casey Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the CS Fund, the Desjardins Blackman Fund, and by the following. And by contributions to your PBS stations from viewers like you. Thank you.
For weeks now, we've been reading the details of the enhanced interrogation techniques approved by the Bush administration and now labeled as torture by President Obama. Is there a better way to get inside the mind of a terrorist, perhaps even change his behavior? Well, stay with us for a rare look at a so-called rehabilitation camp inside Saudi Arabia. Terrorists there are encouraged to renounce violence and then are set free. This includes some former members of Al-Qaeda. Noted author Robert Lacey and producers Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady have our report.
Is that what you're looking for first? Terrorists?
Yeah.
Terrorists?
And another criminal.
Yeah. Across Saudi Arabia, there's a checkpoint outside every city on every highway. And it's proved ideal for catching terrorists. So you can't go far in the kingdom without being stopped and your vehicle looked at. Was a very, very good thing for Saudi Arabia because it showed the mistakes it was making. This country had to look hard and they suddenly saw that they'd given too much power to religious extremists. And now the battle is to claw that power and influence back, and that's what they're trying to do.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. I'm Lubna Hussein and I'm delighted to have with me in the studio in Riyadh Mr. Robert Lacey, a royal biographer and the author of numerous international bestsellers, including the very famous The Kingdom. A lot of people whom I've met during the course of my time here actually saw The Kingdom first through the eyes of Lacey.
This was considered by your Ministry of Information to be unreliable.
It was banned, wasn't
it? And
it
was banned. I think
Fabulous.
It's still banned. Perhaps we shouldn't have it in the studio.
Well, you smuggled it in.
And now I'm back here again, and times have changed even more. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing a sequel to this. After 9/11, several Saudi friends said, look, why not come back? Things have changed. Mm-hmm. And there's an incredibly important story to tell. I mean, there's lots of things that are wrong, and I'm going to write about them in my new book.
So the new book is going to be banned
maybe
also.
Maybe it'll get banned.
And it happened here. What about the Western perception of the kingdom? Has it changed?
No. I mean, something like 9/11 happens, and you know, people hear 15 Saudis were involved. They don't think of the 15 million Saudis who would never dream of flying planes into building or suicide bombing. But that was an incredibly dramatic event. It's going to take a long time to get over, I think. My story, in a way, is of this generation of young men who who were raised on the heroics of Afghanistan, when Osama bin Laden was the hero of the hour, and it's the story of how that went sour. There's something extraordinary happening in Saudi Arabia right now. The royal family is going head to head with the religious zealots who are attacking them for being too close to the West. The government's developed a new proactive policy to change the hearts and minds of their homegrown extremists. And they're not doing it with torture and waterboarding. And it isn't simply to make the West feel safer. If those jihadis had their way, they'd bring down the House of Saud itself. Which part of the country are you from? And what's your name? This is a video of terrorists, ex-terrorists, coming back from Guantanamo Bay. These guys have been in cells for solitary confinement for 5 or 6 years. What's interesting about it is that it's in a private jumbo jet, 747 of Saudi Airways. So far as I know, there's not another country in the world which is allowed to pick up its own nationals. And it has this team on it who really welcome these guys home. Watching the video, I thought it was something like a hero's welcome. And after all, they were jihadis, holy warriors. It's Saudi Arabia's turning over a new leaf. And it's very creative in all sorts of ways. It's what they call soft policing. It's trying to be nice to guys, to persuade them and their families to follow the right path. They have this program of re-brainwashing them, or de-brainwashing them. I don't know what it is. They call it the resort. Can't get my head around that. Terrorist camp. Boot camp is clearly not boot camp. It's a rehab. I think rehab's the best word for it.
الجهاد وضوابطه عادة ما المقصود من الجهاد يعني إيش الهدف من عبادة الجهاد إعلاء كلمة الله
إعلاء كلمة الله قام شاعر الله
trying to ask this question what's the definition of الجهاد
he was asking them and what were the different things they said
to defend our country
to defend our country
yes this is just in general our subject today for today's الجهاد and its conditions
Jihad and its conditions or its rules.
Rules, yes. Yeah.
The rules of jihad.
Yes, they, according to Islam, the right jihad.
The rules of holy war.
Yes.
Right.
This guy went to Iraq. Right. He didn't get a permission from the king. He should have had the permission from the king. They told him, we want you to suicide.
They wanted him to suicide
bomb? Yeah, he carried a bomb and blew up himself.
I see.
And then the American planes came bomb this area, the area he was in.
What's his name?
Wolf.
Veen.
In Arabic, Wolf. Told him, change your name.
Yeah.
He's
a peaceful wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long has he been now in the program?
2 months and 15 days.
Right. And what is his story?
رحت
العراق. He went to Iraq.
He went.
شفت بالإنترنت شفت بالإعلام خاصص ورا أبو غريب. ما في أحد ما شافه.
He saw Abu Ghraib pictures.
صورة
تعذيب. How they torturing them. Yeah. Their bodies naked.
And what did that make him feel in his heart?
تشعر لما من داخلك.
مندافع عن المسلمين مندافع عن.
I couldn't stand it. I have to defend my Muslims brothers.
Right.
Like he couldn't take it.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you go to the rehabs, the terrorists, extremists, are not told to renounce jihad. They are just told to listen to the government and do what the government and the sheikh tells them. They know they can't eradicate jihad from their spirit any more than most of us foreigners would say Americans can get rid of militarism. Say the Interior Ministry is the most powerful ministry in Saudi Arabia. It controls security. It controls the borders, which are part of immigration. And of course, at the moment, and for the last 20 years, it's been in charge of security against terrorism. But a few weeks ago, it was announced that two of these gentlemen, having been through the program, went off to Yemen and joined Al-Qaeda. So that raises a big question. Is it working? Saudi Arabia is a bit like the United States in its area. Down to the south, it's got a very, very poor region. The US has got Mexico. Saudi Arabia's got Yemen. Very, very poor. And that creates tensions because illegal immigrants are forever trying to get into the country, and it creates a sort of badlands down in the south where, at the moment, Al-Qaeda can go and get refuge. So, in the long term, it's an unstable situation. Border patrol. Yeah.
One of Ministry of Interior's department.
Right. So this is really like a military road, just for patrol purposes.
There is seven checkpoints.
Seven checkpoints. Roughly how many people will go through here every day?
1,000 to 800.
Yeah. 800. What
does the rasmi mean? That's legal.
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 And any, we know that some Al-Qaeda are in Yemen. Do any come through here ever?
There is fear, and that fear is empowering them to be ready at all times.
I see. Miles along the border, and this is one of the watchtowers, which is every few miles, can look out, and you can actually see people across in those trees waiting for us all to go when they can come running across. There are drug smugglers who try this route, and then there also just maybe the odd member of Al-Qaeda trying to get back into Saudi. This is a bus of guys that have been caught crossing the border.
Along this line, there's a lot of villages that the border
goes through.
Goes through it.
Right, yeah.
So there's families on both sides.
Who have the right to cross.
Who have the right to cross.
And then other people slip in with them and try and get in.
Take advantage of that and try to slip in.
They're picking up guys all day long. And then they question them. And some prove to have terrorist connections. A lot of them just prove to be illegal immigrants looking desperately for work. After all, bin Laden himself is the son of a Yemeni who came to Saudi Arabia and made himself into a great businessman. The Interior Ministry has an almost impossible challenge to keep out every potential terrorist through this porous border to its south. They're aware they have a responsibility to the rest of the world, but their first priority, like any country, is to make things safe here. I'm writing about the Age of Terror and how the Age of Terror began for us with 9/11. But for the Saudis, their Age of Terror didn't start until 2 years later, in May 2003, when Al-Qaeda attacked inside Saudi towns for the first time, and suicide bombers began blowing themselves up in the kingdom. They issued orders for the royal family to be overthrown, and this was when people's view of the Interior Ministry started to change. When I came to live here 30 years ago, people were scared of the Interior Minister and his secret police. You whispered about them. Now, strangely, they've become the heroes of society because they've chased the bad guys away. They've protected the king and the royal family. They keep the streets of Saudi Arabia safe. And of course, when they die fighting the terrorists, now they become the martyrs.
This is Suwaidi. It's notorious, or it was notorious, as one of the really extremist neighborhoods of Riyadh. It's where all the jihadis came. They lived here. This is the sort of area where Al-Qaeda, if they are recruiting in Riyadh at the moment, would come, because they are very simple tribal folk. There's not as much education here as there is elsewhere in Riyadh. And there is this enduring mistrust of the West and what it's done. And the recent war in Gaza will have been watched here on every Al Jazeera screen. And the young men would say, let's go off and fight. Why isn't our government allowing us to go and fight holy war? We went and fought holy war against the Russians in Afghanistan. Why can't we go and do the same thing against the Israelis in Gaza and save our Arab brothers? You sold your car to go on jihad?
Yeah, sold everything.
It says here in this document,
yeah,
that you attended a basic course in the Kalashnikov, the, yeah, Semenov, all these guns.
Yeah.
That's true?
Yeah, that's true.
Do you meet Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, I met him. He tried to recruit me like the others, you know. And
when you say he tried to recruit you, you were there in Afghanistan?
Yeah. First he gave you training, then he tried to recruit you to be with him, to follow his orders. And I spent almost 2 weeks in Tora Bora, then bin Laden came.
It's What's it like seeing a B-52 come over?
We get used in that by the time.
They're used to
it. Yeah, yeah. Because this was happening. The first day bin Laden came, they start focusing on us, you know. Before, they were bombing around, you know. I mean, in all places, you know. But when he came, I think they get information that he's there. So they start bombing, and he stay under that bombing, you know, for 25 days. 26 days, yeah. Finally, he is the one that give order for everybody. Get out. He get out first.
He got out first?
Yeah, yeah. You know, but when he left Tora Bora, he left walking.
Like he left us. Walking?
Yeah, like us.
Has the attitude in this country changed? I mean, when you were a kid,
yeah,
you went to be a jihadi.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing. Everybody said,
You go to Afghanistan, good idea.
Yeah.
But now, it's not a good idea.
Of course, it's changed a lot.
Do you feel that you got used? Brainwashed?
Kind of.
Kind of?
Yeah.
Would you ever have been willing to suicide bomb? Did people try and make you suicide bomb?
They are not straight about it, but they make...
How do you mean not straight?
I mean, they don't work directly. They make some lecture about that is okay, you know, but they don't force people. Then they make who like to be.
What, there was a list for people who wanted to suicide?
Yeah.
There was a list?
Yeah, there was.
Sign up here to suicide?
Yeah, you go and you say that you would like to join with Al-Qaeda and you say, put me on this list.
This country is a creation of jihad. 300 years ago, there was a Saudi state built on an alliance between the House of Saud and a ferocious, puritanical interpretation of Islam based here in Riyadh. So jihad is in the blood of this country. And they're still working out where it went wrong and why now jihad is a dirty word. I don't think it's a coincidence that jihad grew into a worldwide phenomenon when Saudi Arabia became the oil power they are today. That gave them the resources to fund holy war. Lots of people here, when you talk to them, will say, well, 1,428 years ago is when Muhammad received his revelation, and for 1,350 of those years, nothing changed here. It was desert and the little oases, and that's what the House of Saud took over at the beginning of the 20th century. Oil doesn't start pumping here till the 40s, 50s, and even then the price of oil is so low it doesn't make much difference. And then suddenly, 1973, 74, the oil price explosion, money comes rushing in, and everything starts changing. Saudi Arabia has the most Islam in the world, the most oil in the world, and until recently, it was the biggest exporter of jihadis. If the oil ran out, obviously Saudi Arabia's role in the economy of the world would diminish to next to nothing. And let's not underrate the role of their money in the difficult years ahead. They are one of the few countries, due to their innate conservatism, that didn't get wrapped up in this latest madness. They're now third in the world for foreign reserves. They have got very little debt. But when it comes to social issues and terrorism and extremism, then that makes them important from now into the foreseeable future.